All right, what's going on? Welcome back to the Insight with Irv show. And today we have a unique episode because, well, we just finished finding out that the president finally passed or finally signed an executive order. This is interesting because, and we, by the way, we just finished making a full YouTube video on this, but I wanted to make an actual podcast on this for the simple fact that there's a lot of moving pieces when it comes to an executive order. So I wanted to dive in not just to what the executive order actually stands for, but also what entails to follow, meaning is this legitimate? Do we have to have something else signed off? How soon is this going to actually go into effect? What issues are presented on the back end when it comes to executive orders actually being passed? And so before getting into that, I did want to go ahead and kind of give you guys a refresher of how we got to this executive order to begin with. You see, up to this point, there were about 10, maybe 11 consecutive face-to-face meetings between Democrats and Republicans. So there was really four main negotiators when it came to this stimulus package that was being negotiated. And right now there was really two on the table that we were dealing with. One of them is known as the HEALS Act, which was presented by Mitch McConnell and the Republicans. And the other one was known as the HEROES Act, which actually passed a few months ago through the House of Representatives, but never did or moved anywhere once it reached the Senate. Okay, so that's where we're at so far. Now, when Senate and when Congress got back from vacation, what ended up taking place was, well, we had Republican leaders and we had Democratic leaders deciding to meet. And so we had Steven Mnuchin and Mark Meadows on the Republican side, and then we had Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer on the Democratic side. And they weren't able to agree on main points, which we're going to get into a little bit more detail as to what the president actually decided to sign off on. They couldn't get past the agreeing of unemployment benefits on the amount of state and local funding, as well as HEROES pay that some of us know as hazard pay. Republicans were calling it a bailout, according to Democrats, and Democrats were saying that they are pretty much trying to bring down really heavily Democratic states, so to speak. And then you have Republicans on the back end saying that, well, it's not either of those. It's actually, we're not trying to bail out states that have been fiscally irresponsible with the funds that we've actually allocated and given to them. Okay, so that's where we are now. Fast forward to Friday that just passed, August 7th. They were supposed to reach an agreement, or at least something, because even Congress was pressed for extending their recess, which is supposed to be August 7th. Now, they left back to their local cities, their local town, to their respected areas. But Mitch McConnell did put a note out, Mitch McConnell, Republican senator, leader, majority leader, stating, hey, look, you guys can go back home, but we will be having you guys on call for 24 hours, okay? Why is that important? That's important to note because if they are on call, that means that they were hoping to reach a deal. And so Friday came and nothing happened. And what ended up following Friday was a press conference by President Donald Trump saying, okay, nothing was reached. I told you guys that if no agreements were reached, I would go ahead and take powers into my own hands and I would sign off on something called an executive order. Now, some things that you need to know about an executive order is that it doesn't necessarily go into effect right away. It actually faces quite a bit of challenges when it's actually attempted to get put into place, which is what we saw with Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer, again, Democratic leader, said Trump has two options. He can continue to negotiate with us, or he can go ahead and go off with his executive order, and we will see how far that goes, because we will not only see states resist it, but we will also see heavy amounts of litigation coming against it. Because one thing about executive orders is, although even a president could sign it off and put it into place and it can be enacted as a law, what follows that is it can be countered by really a counter law that would bring that down. Meaning if Congress decides to pass on a counter law, so let's say if it's voted that we are going to have International Sky Day for whatever reason, let's just use that as an example, we're going to have International Sky Day, and that gets, let's say, an executive order by the president, Well, Congress can come back, and if they get enough votes from the House of Representatives and from the Senate, they can go ahead and counteract that and say, no, we're not going to have that as a national holiday. And I'm just kind of throwing that as a general example, because I don't want this episode to be so boring, so to speak, because we are going to be covering quite a bit of material here. So there are some things in that executive order and really three memorandums that we should know about that were put into place and signed by the president yesterday, August 8th. So the four actions that we should be looking at right now is the $400 for the weekly unemployment benefit that will replace the $600 that Americans are receiving right now from the CARES Act. And that's, again, weekly in addition to what you're getting from the state. Now, one thing in there that it's unfortunate for millions of Americans is that there is a sentence or a piece of article within that legislation that he's looking to get passed is, well, if you weren't receiving $100 a week from unemployment, then you would not be able to receive the $400. Why does that make things a little trickier? It makes it trickier because according to the CARES Act, it was if you received at least a dollar from unemployment, then you would qualify for the $600 in addition to what you would be getting by the state. Now you have some states that they're giving you the PUA, especially if you are self-employed and things like that. But some states like California, where it's right around $45, that could mean millions of Americans getting left out that possibly need it the most. So that's the first thing. The second thing is this, the extension of the moratorium on evictions that really expired back in July. I think it was July 24th. And they expired back on July 24th, and this extension would actually put it through the end of the year. Now, one thing that is to note about the eviction moratorium is, well, it's exactly what it is. It's kind of like a ban on evictions, but it doesn't really do much for people that are falling behind, because once that eviction ban lifts, unless there's funds allocated, which the president did state that he does want funds allocated to help those that have fallen behind on their mortgages and on the eviction. Now, the amount hasn't actually been discussed yet, but assuming those funds do get allocated, then it would bring people back up to date with their payments and bring them current. But if for whatever reason it's not in place, well, that just simply means that these Americans are going to have to pay that rent when it's due. So if you've fallen behind 6 months of rent, the eviction ban just means that you don't have to pay it for these next six months. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have to pay it when it is due, because best believe that unless a new piece of legislation gets passed and Democrats and Republicans can get their act together and come together on this stimulus package, we're going to see really the can getting kicked further down the road with this eviction avalanche. Next, we have the assisting with student loan deferrals for monthly payments and interest rates through the end of the year. That's nothing new. That was already included in the CARES Act. But obviously, what makes it interesting now is with that getting extended, I don't really see too many people fighting it on that end, just because it doesn't really put money back into the hands of the Americans. It doesn't really take money out of the government's hands, which is kind of what's been going on now with budget cuts. And the budgeting, we have Republicans that don't only want to spend $1 trillion, they do not want to come above that. And then you have Democrats that are willing to come down to the $2 trillion threshold for the next stimulus package, which, by the way, the original CARES Act was right around $2.2 trillion, but the HEROES Act was right around $3. But again, nothing was reached. That happened on Friday, and then they mentioned it again on Saturday. Nothing's been reached since then, which again forced the president to take matters into his own hands. With the student loan deferral, it's a good option if you are looking to possibly get your debt down quicker and improve your credit. I would personally take advantage of this if I had a large amount of debt, being that there's really no fixed interest on it now. It's being extended to through the 31st. So if there's anything that you can take advantage of right now, it should be this. And that's one thing that I would possibly preach at the hilltops for anyone that wants to come out of debt, is take advantage of the student loan deferral right now, because it's going to not only help you with your monthly payments get lower, but if you, let's say, haven't lost your job, or let's say that you are collecting unemployment, and for whatever reason you have some extra money laying around, you're staying with family, whatever it is, whatever your situation is, tackle that debt down, because once interest rates come back up, it makes it so much harder for you to actually pay down that debt. That would be my 2 cents and my piece of advice for you if you're in that situation. And then last but not least, we have the deferral of tax payments starting on August starting September 1st, but it would be retroactive on August 1st for anyone making $100,000 or less. The way that this works, and keep in mind, when it comes to payroll tax cuts, it all comes off of your Medicare and your Social Security, which is why so many people are against it, because there's no more money going into that pot. We already have an issue with Medicare and Social Security. I mean, for crying out loud, when I go to retire, 65, 70, whenever that happens, that's not going to be for another 30, 40 years. I personally don't believe that we're going to have a Social Security system or a Medicare system in place. That's just my opinion, though, just from everything happening right now and the amount of debt that our country is piling up. But when it comes to that specifically, that's so difficult to actually implement, because the president also added on there that if he gets reelected for another 4 years, another term, he's actually going to wipe out the actual debt or the actual funds that we would need to pay back for the payroll tax cut. Because as you know, if he passes this, or if this actually goes through and no further negotiations go on, and this is all that we have, again, the payroll tax cut, well, there's nothing in there that actually says that we at one point or another do not have to pay that back. And then the other side of that is that the employers actually have to opt in for that. And so that makes it difficult, because I know that a lot of people were wondering, where does that come from? The state? Does that come from the federal withholding? No. That comes from your Social Security, and that comes from your Medicare. That's what they mean when they say the federal tax cut, which is at 7.65% of, again, anyone earning $100,000 or less. So simple math, if you earn $1,000 biweekly on your paycheck, you will be receiving $76.50 in addition to what you are getting paid now. That's all that says, and that's really all you have to know when it comes to that. It's more complicated than that, and that's why so many employers might choose to actually opt out of it. Now, when it comes to the actual executive order, you're probably wondering, okay, is this actually gonna stick? Well, right here, I have a little article, and it says, "While it might seem like an executive order from the president is the final word, since actions aren't subject to congressional approval, but it's more complicated than that, because the Constitution gives Congress control over federal spending, so Trump doesn't have that legal authority to issue binding executive orders about how much they should be spending for this coronavirus pandemic." Okay, so now that you have that in mind, this simply means that even though this is put in place, we still might see some type of counter lawsuits. We still might see some type of counter laws getting put in place on top of this, executive order. And so one executive order that you're probably familiar with is the Emancipation of Proclamation, January 1st, 1863. Now, if that doesn't ring a bell, let me help you out. That's pretty much when Abraham Lincoln said that we want to free the slaves, and that freed right around, I have it right here in my notes, that freed right around 3 million slaves. Because remember, slaves weren't freed on 4th of July. That just meant that we broke off of independence Independence Day, off of Great Britain. It doesn't mean that African Americans are free. So I don't mean to make this a racial thing, but I just wanted to separate those two and kind of parlay that with what an executive order actually is. And again, the most popular one that we know is the Emancipation Proclamation, signed in 1863, January 1st, for those of you guys that are keeping score. Again, freeing 3 million African Americans from slavery. When you actually have that type of executive order into that extreme, obviously we can see why some people are saying, well, there's not going to be another stimulus round, or there's not going to be any more negotiations, because we've seen some pretty powerful executive orders. I want to name a few more here. We have the confiscation of gold. We have facilitating the Manhattan Project, Japanese American concentration camps, nationalizing American steel mills. That was back in 1952. We have a pardon for Nixon, and we have a very interesting one here, which was the creation of the FEMA camps, and that was before the 70s, and that was actually signed by President Jimmy Carter. So when we have all of that, and then when we have what President Donald Trump has just signed, now that actually puts a new scope on how serious this issue can actually be, even if we have guys like Chuck Schumer that are saying that it is going to be countersued, or they may pass something against it. Now, My thoughts on this is that hopefully this speeds up negotiations and it kind of wakes up both sides for them to come back to the negotiating table. This should just be an interim, because if we actually break down the unemployment, one thing that I did leave out that I wanted to let you guys know, with the unemployment, although it is $400, it is $300 being covered by the government and then $100 being covered by the states. And that was one of the big issues with the funding, where we had Republicans did not want to fund or at least come up beyond $200 billion for state and local government funding. That's going to be an issue, because that means that some states may not be able to fund that additional $100 on top of what they are already giving on state benefits, especially if the economy doesn't get any better, because I think at this point we're well past that V-shaped recovery. It looks like we may be going into that W-shaped recovery, which almost feels like a double dip. So that's 400, 375% being covered by the government, and then the other 25% being covered by state and local governments, which again throws a wrench into the entire equation. My opinion and my thoughts on this is that hopefully Democrats and Republicans can come back together this week, hash things out, and actually pass something for the greater of the Americans, because so many will be left out with this stimulus executive order that was just put into place. But if that doesn't happen, then one thing to keep in mind is that the funds allocated for the unemployment, if we are actually running the numbers on this, it's only going to last for about 60, maybe 90 days at most, ladies and gentlemen. Those numbers are alarming. So I did want us to keep an eye on that. And so, like I said, I did make a separate video on this on YouTube, but I wanted to get a little bit more into detail because I know that so many of you guys had questions about the executive order and how soon can that take place, and can that override everything else? And the answer to that is yes, but not without extreme difficulty. Okay, so I hope that you guys enjoyed this episode of the Inside with Irv Show. If you haven't done so already, make sure to subscribe to the podcast. We also have the podcast in video format, same name, Inside with Irv, that you can find on YouTube so that you can see the actual visual layout of everything that we're talking about. And also make sure to subscribe to that channel if you haven't done so already. And we want to thank our sponsors over at Amazon's Audible, where they make it easy and convenient for our listeners and our viewers to get their hands on a free Amazon's Audible book and a free month with Amazon's Audible. Again, just for being a part of this community. Once again, my name is Irvin Pena, but so many of you obviously at this point know me as Irv Official. So until next time, everyone, we will see you on the next episode.